We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio and now our partner Muse. I'm Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year, and Muse, the amazing brain-sensing headband. Why meditate? Because life is messy. We get stressed, anxious, have trouble sleeping, we work too hard, we feel overwhelmed, we worry about the state of the world. We meditate because we're human, and meditation helps. You can download the Meditation Studio app in the App Store, and we hope you'll check out Muse at choosemuse.com. I'm excited to introduce you to my new Untangle collaborator, Arielle Garten, the co-founder of Muse. Arielle was trained as a neuroscientist, was a psychotherapist in private practice for almost a decade, and is a prolific artist. And as if that's not enough, she and her team created a neurotechnology tool that lets you know what's going on inside your brain while you meditate. Arielle will now be hosting Untangle podcast twice a month and will take you inside the head of groundbreaking neuroscientists and psychologists and those skilled in the mental arts. You'll hear one brainiac talking to another, discussing the brain, how it works, how to optimize it, and how to love yours. I think you're going to love this. But today, we're turning the tables and I'm interviewing Arielle so you can meet her firsthand. Now, here's Arielle Garten. Arielle, welcome to Untangle. I'm really happy to have you here today. Thank you so much.
Patricia, it is my joy and pleasure to be here today.
So I want to start by giving our listeners a little background on you in terms of how you first became interested in meditation. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So my interest with meditation started when I was very young. I was really fascinated by this idea of some crazy state that we could enter into, some place that we could take our brain that was different than the everyday. And as I grew, I learned that meditation was not necessarily that state. I'd try to meditate when I was young and not be very successful. I'd go to temple. There was a temple down the street from us in Toronto, and I'd be the only teenager sitting there with a bunch of people of various walks of life, sitting silently as I tried to look at them and figure out, what are they doing? How can I do that thing too? Then I became trained as a neuroscientist and started to really understand the research behind it and the incredible benefits that meditation brings to the brain. I was then trained as a psychotherapist. I had a private practice for almost a decade, and meditation really was the frontline approach to trauma, anxiety, PTSD. And so I'd be at that point more schooled in meditation and try to implement it with my clients and patients and started to understand the vagaries and difficulties of transferring that knowledge effectively. And then it wasn't till I really started building Muse and using it every day that I really had the aha moment of what meditation was to me and what my experience of meditation was and how it was a practice that I could really tangibly bring into my life daily. And then I started to really see the benefits of it.
You trained as a neuroscientist and then you became a psychotherapist. What was your meditation practice at that time?
I had a range of meditation practices. Focused attention on the breath is obviously a staple. Mm-hmm. And mindfulness meditation, as you become a psychotherapist, you tend to be trained in quote unquote mindfulness meditation, and MBSR and MBCT. Those tend to be the approaches that you take from a kind of Western medical perspective. And so those became my foundation.
you also have an art brain, right? You create art as well.
Throughout my whole life, I've always existed very much in this world of art and science. My mother is a large-scale oil and canvas artist, so I grew up with somebody who could imagine something and literally paint it in front of them, have it created, and all of a sudden have a novel thing existing in the world. So I was always very fascinated with the world of art and its ability to transfer human experience from one to another, to create a painting, and in doing so, offer a new perspective on the world, the perspective of the artist that then viewer sees and takes away a new sense of meaning from, a new perspective, a new way of seeing the world. And so I was very interested in creating experiences that help people understand novel aspects of the self or of humanity. And then I was also very interested in the, you know, rigorous scientific proof behind them. What are these phenomena in reality?
So before we start talking about Muse, because I have a lot of questions about Muse, which you co-founded, what do you think it is about you as a human being that makes you so unique in terms of having these sort of disparate interests and curiosity? Was there something out of your childhood? Was there something that sort of spurred you into being curious about art, about more esoteric experiences, about science of the brain? Like, how do these things all come together in one Ariel human being?
Well, I like to think that we are all incredibly unique and we all have a range of experiences that shape us, and we're all beautiful in those amazing ways. In the way that I became me, I would say it was a cross between my mom, and who, as an artist, deeply schooled me in the world of art as she understood it, and my own desire to understand how things worked. I was really fascinated by the world and how it worked, why a table was hard, why molecules have the structure that they do, and that led to a table being hard or lead being softer. And then I became fascinated by the brain and both how it worked from this very empirical perspective, what is the structure and function, what do we know about it, and also the kinds of human experiences that our brain generates for us. I was curious about the experience of being human. And so I became very interested both the function and the form, and also the experience that that form and function created. We see something as red. A, there are a million shades of red. And as an artist, we can, you know, create amazing experiences through the use of red. Like, wow, that's fiery. Wow, you know, that feels alive. Wow, that red is angry. You know, it can communicate so many beautiful and subtle things through the use of art and share these amazing human experiences with one another. Kind of art becomes that currency through which I can make an experience and then hand it off to you to have it, to learn something about me or the world or yourself through it. I'm curious both about the currency of those experiences and the ability to make them and share them, and also the organ that does the perceiving of those experiences. Well, now that I've seen something as red, why am I seeing it as this particular color of red? Why is it triggering fear inside of me? Why would it trigger excitement inside of somebody else? What is it in each of our brains? What are these organs and how do they create our day-to-day perceptions and experiences? And then once we learn that, how do we then go about using that knowledge for the better of ourselves?
I love that. I'm guessing that it's that sort of deep curiosity and interest that inspired you originally to create Muse. But I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about that. Tell us what Muse is. And then I'd love for you to talk about how someone might use it if they were using it for the very first time.
So Muse, for anyone who doesn't know, you've heard this word Muse over and over again, a brain sensing headband. It's actually clinical grade EEG in the slim, beautiful little form that tracks your brain in real time and gives you real time feedback on your meditation. So the metaphor you use is your mind is like the weather. So when you're thinking, distracted, ruminating, you actually hear it as stormy. And as you bring yourself into clear, focused attention, you actually hear the sound of your mind as the storm that quiets. And so in this way with Muse, we're able to give you real-time feedback on your meditation so you really know where your mind is at. And then after the fact, you get scores, stats, data, so you can actually see what your brain was doing moment to moment and have a motivational architecture that keeps you moving forward in your practice. So it's a headband that connects to an app on your phone. And then you plug in your headphones. So through the app, you can actually hear the sound of your own mind, the translated sound of your mind.
So how does this help us learn to meditate, and why is it important for that?
So most people, when they sit down to meditate, really don't know if they're doing it right. Often you'll say, okay, like I did, let's meditate. And you sit down and you close your eyes and your brain just bounces all over the place. And you're like, okay, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? I'm not quite sure. And then you think that you can't really get it because your brain's just bouncing all over the place. It's not getting quiet. And you get up and you're like, well, maybe meditation's not for me. So we really wanted to solve that problem by giving people real-time feedback on their meditation so that you know what you're supposed to be doing in your focused attention training. So you know when you're focused and when you're wandering, or for some people, the fact that you're supposed to notice that you're focused versus mind wandering. You can actually get that real-time feedback, and then we built a structure around it so that you can both understand what your brain is doing and build a practice that you can come back to each and every day. Because meditation, as amazing as it is not helpful if you don't do it regularly.
Yeah, that's a good point. So when you meditate, what's actually happening psychologically and physiologically that is being measured by the brain when you're wearing the headband?
So Muse is built on a focused attention on the breath training. There's lots of different forms of meditation, but focused attention on the breath tends to be the first thing that people learn because you're learning to take your attention and put it on a single object. So meditation is not about having your mind go blank. Meditation is focusing your attention. So in a focused attention meditation, you focus your attention on your breath. And then at some point, your mind will naturally begin to wander away from your breath. And that's the point where Muse picks up and it says, hey, hey, your mind is wandering, and the wind picks up, the storm picks up, and that becomes your cue to bring your mind back to your single object of attention, typically your breath. And it's this basic attentional loop that's at the core of focused attention training. And this is what we help you with.
So we'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, take comfort in Born Shoes. Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
In the past with the meditation, your mind would wander and it would be 1, 3, 5 minutes until you realize, oh, right, I'm on the grocery list. Oh, I'm thinking about that stuff that I was thinking. Right, I should be meditating. Let's bring my brain back. And so with Muse, you actually know instantly that you've wandered and you instantly are able to bring your attention back to your breath. And that loop of paying attention, your mind wandering, you noticing, and then you returning your brain back to your attention, back to the object of your attention, that's called the attentional loop. And that's kind of like doing your rep at the gym. That's kind of like doing your bench press every time you notice and you return. And so with Muse, we help you really quickly notice that you've wandered, really quickly return it, and in doing so, let you strengthen that attentional loop over and over and over. That's kind of the core of your focused attention practice.
Yeah, I like how you talk about it. It's similar to strength training because you're really building that muscle. And is that the beauty of being able to do this over and over again? And do most people that have the headband, is it best for them to be using it every day so that they can learn to sort of strengthen that muscle?
People use Muse in a variety of ways. If you're a beginner, you're going to want to use the Muse every day, and that's how you get into your practice and hone it. Somebody who's an experienced meditator might use Muse for the first 5 minutes of their practice and then go really get quickly into the zone and then go into another practice or a training. Somebody experienced might use Muse actually with all of the volume off, so you're not getting the real-time feedback, but you can track it after the fact. So there's lots of different ways that people use it depending on their use case and your own knowledge and experience with meditation. But everybody finds it like fascinating from various perspectives.
Yeah. I've heard people say it's like the coolest thing because it gives them a sense of this is really what's happening in your brain as you're meditating. And so I'm also curious, there are so many different types of people that meditate, obviously, and you also have therapists and corporations that use Muse. How are different types of people using it? Like, how would a mom use it, or how would a therapist or an entrepreneur be able to use Muse to sort of improve their performance, if you will?
So different people use it in different ways. We have lots of moms that use it regularly. And in that case, there's often one Muse for the family. The mom will use it. The dad will then borrow it. The kids will start using it. They'll start to share their data with one another and see how they're doing. It becomes an entire family affair. So everybody gets on board meditating. If somebody is high producing executive in the office, and I get tons of those, people who work in Bay Street, Wall Street, VC firms, high performing executives love Muse because it's this very targeted way to do their meditation practice. And the sensation that I get there is for them, it's like their meditation on hyperdrive. We have lots of clinicians that use with their patients. So therapists, psychiatrists, life coaches, doctors. So anywhere where you would previously have recommended meditation to your patient, if a patient comes in with heart disease, as a doctor, you want to recommend lifestyle changes, diet, exercise, and meditation. But the doctor rarely knows how to meditate, specifically not effectively enough to communicate to the patient how to meditate. The patient certainly doesn't know how to meditate. And so now the doctor can simply hand the patient a Muse in these situations, and they'll go home and meditate regularly and be able to start their practice. We also have lots of research institutions that use Muse. So Mayo Clinic, for example, has been running a trial using Muse with breast cancer patients awaiting surgery. Muse 4 weeks before surgery to help reduce the stress of surgery, and use it for 2 weeks after to potentially reduce recovery times.
Wow.
And that went so effectively with Mayo that they opened up to all their Mayo sites and to a water pool of patients awaiting surgeries. They felt it was really effective.
That's amazing. Yeah. We have a teacher on our app on Meditation Studio, Kara Bradley, who has used Muse with a Villanova basketball team and the football team. She loves it. And she talks about how it's really helped them get into a flow state and it has improved their performance. And I'm curious how you think about that. How can Muse help you get into that flow state? And how does it help with a real focused performance, even for athletes?
So first of all, that's super exciting. We have lots of sports teams that are using Muse, and I didn't know about those two examples. So that's awesome. When you're entering into a flow state, one of the hardest things to do is to actually get over the threshold and get into that flow state. So we're very tempted as humans to, it's like, I want to sit down and do some great work tonight. I'm going to go and I'm going to do that report. It's going to be awesome. But it's very difficult to actually sit down and do that report at times because we have all these distractions that pull us away. Like, oh, you know, we should really watch that television show, or, oh, eating something sounds like a much better idea right now. And so with a focused attention training meditation, what you learn to do very early on is manage your distraction effectively. Mm. You learn all of those times when your brain just wanders to some other thought. Previously, you typically take that thought and you're like, oh yeah, the television, let's think about that now. Or, oh yeah, the fridge, let's think about that now. But with a focused attention meditation, you quickly learn, nope, you know what? Back to my breath. Nope, back to the thing in front of me. Back to the report. Back to the task that I want to do. So you learn not to get pulled away by your distractions. And you learn to be able to sit with the thing that's in front of you that you want to accomplish. So we tend to be pulled away both by distracting thoughts and by distracting feelings. So you might be sitting down to do that big report and it's like, oh, I should do that, but you know what? I kind of don't really know what to do. So it makes me kind of a little nervous. So I'm going to just avoid it right now. Or, oh, you know, there's really big expectations on me and I really don't think I can accomplish them. And that makes me really scared. So I'm going to just not do this right now. And with meditation, one of the key things that you learn is to manage your emotional experience of life. So in the past, you may have had an emotion arising and be like, oh, that seems really scary and intimidating. I'm just going to feel scared and intimidated and pull away. But once you establish and maintain a meditation practice, you learn to have a different dialogue with your emotions. You might have the sensation of like, oh, that feeling of being scared is arising, and you can stop and you can actually dialogue with it. You can think about it and you can be like, you know what? This is a sensation. Doesn't mean that report's going to bite my head off. My desire to do the report might actually be stronger than the sensation of fear that I'm feeling. Or if it's not, I know that I can sit with the sensation, let it rise and let it fall away, and then be able to get into my work. So you really change the relationship with your physiological experiences so that all of those things that keep you from the flow state, the distractions, the fears, the emotions, they become just moments that come and then go, so that you can actually remain focused or keep your focus on the thing that you care about. And then once you start doing that, you know, once you get into that rapport, you start having the ideas flowing, you're in the zone, and you're able to actually access the flow state. And once a flow state is accessed, it's something that you can maintain. Or if it's not, we have this amazing training with focused attention training to recognize the distractions that pull us out of that state and say, nope, I'm going to come back to the thing in front of me because that's what I care about right now.
Will you talk a little bit about what is actually happening in the brain during meditation?
Sure. This is one of my favorite topics. During meditation, there's actually many changes that happen in the brain that have been documented in, by now, hundreds of research papers. One of the interesting things we see is an increase in activity in the prefrontal cortex. So this is the work of Dr. Sarah Lazard of Harvard. The prefrontal cortex is our planning, organizing, higher order part of our brain. And the bad news is as you age, your prefrontal cortex thins. Uh-oh. But the good news is if you maintain a long-term meditation practice, you can maintain the thickness of your prefrontal cortex even into older age. So meditation strengthens your prefrontal cortex. It also decreases the activity of your amygdala and in some cases even decreases the physical size of your amygdala. So your amygdala is your fight or flight response. It's the thing that gives you the sense of fear and danger and makes you scared of snakes and sometimes spiders, even though you may not need to be. And in this world in which we don't encounter snakes, often makes you afraid of your boss and all sorts of other relatively benign things. When you have a long-term meditation practice, you actually decrease both the activity of your amygdala and even the size, which has a direct correlation to its relative activity. You've seen an increase in your corpus callosum. That's the connection between your left and right hemispheres. Also in the work of Sarah Lazar, 8 weeks of meditation can increase the density of your gray matter. That's the number of connections you have in your brain. And you also see the decrease in something called your default mode network. This is a work of Dr. Judson Brewer and others. When you ask somebody to lie in an MRI machine and just think about nothing, let your mind be at rest, you still see activity, and that's in this default mode network. And it's a connection between your prefrontal cortex and your PCC, your posterior cingulate cortex. If you put an experienced meditator into an MRI and you tell them to think about nothing, they're literally thinking about nothing. You don't see the same level of activation in this network that tends to be our internal dialogue or internal chatter. So the metaphors that we have in meditation around the monkey mind or decreasing the chatter in our brain is something that we actually see a neurophysiological correlate to. When you increase your meditation, you decrease the physical networks related to that kind of internal chatter. So focused attention meditation increases your attention. And your prefrontal cortex is a big player in this kind of attention that you have. Your prefrontal cortex is also responsible for the act of metacognition, the ability to kind of rise above and be able to see what's going on in your own thinking, to be able to think about your thinking. And so when you strengthen your prefrontal cortex, you're strengthening your ability to have that metacognitive ability. And then your prefrontal cortex can actually act to downregulate your amygdala. So you end up strengthening the connection, potentially, there's one school of thinking, you're strengthening the connection between your prefrontal cortex and your amygdala so that it can actually regulate it more effectively. The brain can regulate itself. Your prefrontal cortex can say like, hey, I can see the situation's not actually threatening. Amygdala, shh, quiet, it's all good. We don't need to hyperreact. You don't need to drive the situation here. Actually, prefrontal cortex here has got it under control.
Yeah. And I like what you're talking about, metacognition. We talk about that a lot as that sort of witness mind. So you don't just quickly become your behavior, but you have this strength to be able to see what's going on from another perspective.
You got it.
And I think a lot of our listeners are probably thinking, how much do I have to meditate? How long do I have to meditate? Life is so imperfect, and it's a practice that we just have to keep doing and coming back to. But what is your advice on that for people who are wondering, maybe they've meditated for 6 months or a year and they're still frustrated? What is your advice?
There's no magic number for the perfect amount of time to meditate. For the studies that we've done with Muse, we've seen
My name's Dwayne Osterlund. I'm host of the Addicted Mind podcast. Are you ready to uncover the science of breaking addiction? Then join me on the Addicted Mind, where compassion meets innovation. We're going to explore real stories of addiction recovery, hear from real experts on science-based treatment, and you'll be able to equip yourself with the tools for lasting change. So whether you're on the road to recovery yourself or walking alongside someone who is, the Addicted Mind podcast is your companion. So check it out. Subscribe on whatever podcast app you're using right now and be part of the conversation that's changing lives.
Take a seat at 10 to 20 minutes a day of musing. We did one study. It was actually done by Baycrest Hospital in Toronto, and they looked at average individuals musing for 10 minutes a day for 6 weeks. And at the end of the 6 weeks, they saw a decrease in self-reported symptoms, so less headache, pain, nausea, an increase in calm, obviously, and also an increase in performance on the Stroop task. So it's a psychological task that shows you two things that interfere with one another, and you have to make a decision very quickly. And we're able to see a 50 millisecond improvement in decision-making under stressful situations after using these for 6 weeks, for 10 minutes a day.
And so you're a mom. He's two.
I am. He is.
Yeah. And so how does meditation help you be a more mindful mom?
Oh, man, in every way possible. So in this case, I have no control in the study. I was never a mom without meditation. So I don't... I can't scientifically tell you the difference, but based on my limited study of one over the last 2 years, it has been a phenomenal gift to have had a meditation practice prior to going into mothering. Motherhood is extraordinary. It's also a phenomenal life change. And you go from being the independent, capable woman that you're used to being to somebody who is, you know, now at the behest of a young child. And there has to be a second person included in your life and indeed, you know, taking over your life. Mm-hmm. And so often we get a year of maternity leave, which is amazing. And so often it's tempting to fantasize about what your life should be when you're not taking care of a newborn. And a meditation practice was like, that was the first moment when it was obvious, when I was able to just let go of the fantasies and let go of the places where my brain wanted to go in distraction and just being, say like, no, I'm here now. And I take so much joy and pleasure in this.
That's so nice. Have you started teaching your son how to meditate, or 2 years old is probably a little bit too squirmy, or what is it? How do you feel about that?
Young. I have tried, but 2 years is too young. But what we do is 3 deep breaths. So starting to teach the emotional self-regulation and self-soothing through the concept of 3 deep breaths. So if you really want something, it's like, okay, 3 deep breaths. And then you can, if appropriate, I can get it. If he's really frustrated, as two-year-olds often get, mm-hmm. talk about his emotional experience, what's going on, and to help himself soothe, 3 deep breaths. And so he knows that that's a place where he's going to go. And immediately as he starts to do that, it activates the physiology that calms him down.
Which is so awesome. If you can do that in an airport when you're traveling, it's magic.
Yes.
That's great.
And he's magic.
He's magic.
Oh, yes, is he magic? Meditation is the training that builds the skill of mindfulness, which is your moment-to-moment awareness of your thoughts, feelings, experiences, day-to-day. And that practice and mindfulness has made every moment of motherhood so much richer. Like knowing that I have the skill to, at any moment, just drop what I'm thinking and be with him and actually be with him, it's amazing. Mm. These are moments that we all know we cannot get back. And to have a tool that allows me to deepen and savor them is just, I'm so grateful.
Is it ever challenging for you as an entrepreneur and you have a full-time job, you're pulled in a lot of different directions as a thought leader? What do you do when you are feeling conflict around these different things that are in your life?
Yeah. So of course it's extremely challenging and you become much more efficient at your time management and much more efficient at what you say yes and no to. My previous life, I could be on a plane every 3 days and do it all. And so you have to come to terms with what you choose to do and the value that you choose to get out of things. And you really have to come to terms with saying, yes, I want the value of my family. And the recognition that the value that it gives you is so deep and so rich that it sort of turns down the other needs. All of the other places where I would have sought fulfillment, whether socially or in my career, just the volume on all of those turns right down because you have so much fulfillment right in front of you.
That's so beautiful. And I love how you use the word choose, or it's a choice, because so many of us are just pulled in different directions and we're on autopilot. We talk about that so much on this show. And to be able to stop and pause and know that you have a choice is a really amazing thing that so many people haven't discovered. And it's such a great opportunity, especially with a young child. So that's really awesome. So moving on, where do you think we're headed with brain sensing technology and devices that are intended to improve our lives? What are some of your thoughts on that?
So people often ask me, you know, is wearable computing just a fad? And the answer is absolutely no. Wearable computing is where computing is going. In order to have technological experiences that give us value in our everyday, those technologies need to be embedded within our everyday and do so in ways that are seamless. So I'm not an advocate for technology for technology's sake. I think that's really useless. Any implementation of technology has to be there to support or possibly amplify our human experience. We can't be in love with the technology. We have to be just realistic about the results and the outcomes and ensure that those are the things that are aligned with supporting our everyday life or enhancing our everyday life. I've recently gotten really into tracking my heart rate at rest and exercise. And there's a ton of data demonstrating that your resting heart rate has a direct correlation to your health and by extension, the length of your life. Targeting resting heart rates as well as targeting exercise heart rates is an excellent way to maintain the right level of fitness. So by having tools that give you insight where you previously wouldn't have had anything, tools that can make your invisible world visible, you can make better and better choices about how you want to live your life.
Yeah, that's what I love about it too. I think this is probably a good time in the show to let our audience know that you are going to be my colleague moving forward and will be hosting your own version of Untangle twice a month moving forward. And you're going to be interviewing neuroscientists and psychologists. Will you talk a little bit about your interviews and what you hope to accomplish and just share a little bit about that with us?
Absolutely.
Awesome.
So I'm really excited to be co-hosting Untangle with you. And the unique perspective that I bring is as a neuroscientist and a psychotherapist. So I recently went through a concussion, and in the process of doing so, I could literally pick up the phone and talk to any neuroscientist in the world. One of the first people I called was Dr. Norman Doidge, the author of The Brain That Changes Itself. And I said, Norm, I have a concussion. And he said, great. Have you read my second book, The Brain's Way of Healing? And I could say, Norm, I can't read. I have a concussion. Please tell me what it says. Tell me what you think I should do. At which point, he, you know, came up with a broad set of personalized recommendations. And I was able to do that with literally dozens of colleagues. And so I was really excited to bring that knowledge and experience and one-on-one conversations that I have with my colleagues to everybody and to take you all inside the head of this amazing set of neuroscientists, psychotherapists, people skilled in the mental arts, so that we can all learn both from their incredible cutting edge work, as well as their own human experience, how it is that we can optimize our brains and really manage the crazy in all of our lives.
It's going to be so awesome to have you doing these interviews because I'm so curious about all of this. And I think it's amazing that a lot of this came out of not only your work as a neuroscientist and a psychotherapist and all the other brilliant things you've done in your life, but out of a concussion. And so I think we'll all be curious to hear sort of your personal experiences as you've talked to a lot of these different professionals. How did you receive the information and how did you get back to the state of health that you're in right now?
Yeah, so I'm very, very passionate about the brain and how to manage and improve it across multiple domains, whether it's managing the negative thinking that we have, what supplements to take, how we optimize it from a sleep perspective. And so you will learn the journey that I've gone through and the journey that so many of my colleagues have gone through. And so we're really going to deep dive into people's work, whether it's Rudy Tanzi, who's on the forefront of Alzheimer's research, Jim Quick, he's a brain trainer to the stars, teaching learning and memory techniques, to Dr. Norman Doidge and dozens of others. And so we're really going to learn about the brain and then also their tools and techniques that are going to help you learn to optimize your brain in your own life.
I'm so excited. I think your first show is going to be in about 2 weeks. So we'll let everybody know. I also wanted to share with everyone that Meditation Studio has merged with Muse. And so we'll have a lot more to share about that in the weeks and months to come, but it's going to be very exciting. Arielle, do you want to say anything about that as well?
So first of all, I'm incredibly excited. Meditation Studio has such a beautiful well of rich content and experiences that you guys have created. And it's this perfect marriage between our brain sensing technology that gives you real-time feedback and the real heart and soul and depth of Meditation Studio content and experiences. So I feel like I'm in heaven now being able to kind of fulfill our dreams together.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And as I said, we'll have a lot more information on what that means to people. But certainly if you're enjoying Meditation Studio, you'll continue to enjoy Meditation Studio as you're enjoying it now. And we'll just have lots of new opportunities to share moving forward. Arielle, thank you so much for being on Untangle today. I'm grateful that you were able to talk to us today. And I'm excited that you're going to be a partner moving forward. And I just think there's so many awesome things to come. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Patricia. And look forward to talking to everybody every few weeks and sharing what's inside the mind of some of the most amazing neuroscientists and psychotherapists and meditators in the world. So I feel excited about delivering the interior of people's heads to all of you so that you can learn more about what goes on inside your own minds.
Thank you.
Thanks so much to Arielle for joining us today, and tune in next week to enjoy her very first interview on Untangle. We can't wait. If you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And if you have a minute, can you give us a review or rating for this podcast? It helps a lot. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store and check out Muse at choosemuse.com. We'll see you next week.